but we're headed to Nome, nice. And that's where we're going to get Raven. So
we're going to Nome?
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
So Delta is growing Seattle more, it seems, and they're adding Chicago three times a day on an Airbus 319. Interesting move, as it kind of goes directly against Alaska again, which it seems to be their pure intention for Seattle at this point.
But that's not just Alaska. That's American and United as well.
No, that's true. I mean, there's a lot of competition on that route now.
Do they have Spirit or Frontier there either? I feel like that's one of those routes that they might be, but I don't know.
I feel like Spirit's up there. I think Spirit's there.
Yeah, and I imagine you've got Southwest to Midway as well.
Probably, yeah.
It does not look like Spirit or Frontier have nonstops. Looks like they're connecting service, at least in a couple of weeks on a random Friday. To me, the really interesting thing about this was not that they're doing it. I think we've always expected that they're going to continue to grow and continue to do this sort of, you know, expansion there, although they did say they were going to try to slow some of the expansion, waiting for more international gates. What's interesting to me about it is when Delta shows up with a new route, they don't show up and be like, hey, let's see if we can put a flight to somewhere. Mm-hmm. They're showing up three times weekly. They're making it about, we're going to get the business travelers. We're going to show up with a level of service that is useful and compelling for everyone. So, you know, and part of it is the market. Obviously, Chicago's a big market. So they're, you know, adding three more flights to that isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world in terms of just what the demand is and what it can handle. But when you start seeing sort of like last week or 2 weeks ago when we were talking about sort of the Alaska expansion out of San Francisco in the Bay Area, it was like a flight here, a flight there. The only multi-frequency they had, I think, was San Jose to L.A. Everything else was like a 1X here and there. So admittedly not giant planes, but it seems like Delta's approach is a little more aggressive on some of these things.
Well, yeah, the cities are also very different. Like Alaska was going to, what was it, like Albuquerque, Austin, things like that, which don't have a lot of traffic to begin with.
Sure.
Whereas we're talking about Seattle and Chicago.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And like, they are definitely larger markets, but you know, I don't think that all of the expansion that we saw from San Francisco with Alaska is necessarily would be smaller cities, but these are definitely two larger ones. They are competing against what I'm looking at here, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 daily flights. So we're going from 14 to 17 daily frequencies nonstop in that market, it looks like.
And the other thing that I would pose is, I don't think there's any destinations that Delta serves to Asia from Seattle that are not served nonstop from Chicago.
Chicago.
So it can't be a feed thing for business travelers, right?
Business travelers necessarily, right? Yeah, yeah. Obviously, Delta still wants it to be a feed thing, but yes, it becomes a challenge of if I'm the business traveler, am I going to take, you know, am I so loyal to Delta that I'm going to fly Chicago, Seattle, Hong Kong instead of either United or Cathay nonstop,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, and interchange whatever other airlines and destinations in Asia you want there.
Right.
To me, the answer is no, but.
And that would be the answer to me. So I don't really understand Delta's game here. Just like, so they can, it has, my guess is that it's just to attract more of the Seattle base, not necessarily the Chicago base.
Or West Coast feed, right? Like West Coast, like intra West Coast stuff. But I don't know why they just wouldn't send that through Salt Lake City.
But pretty much anywhere Delta's going to fly from Seattle on a connection, you can fly nonstop to Chicago.
Yeah. True. I that's kind of what I'm getting at is like, it's not like, it doesn't serve you unless you really
Salt Lake on a much shorter and easier connection than going all the way to the far corner of the country.
Yeah. And it doesn't really serve you unless you want to fly Delta. Like your intention is to fly Delta. So,
yeah, I mean, it is easy to see how this would be useful to them from the context of building up the Seattle base, right? You have to serve all the markets that the people go to if you want the corporate contracts. I know maybe it was earlier this week or last week, even JetBlue was talking on a investor briefing about how Boston grew for them. And now that they're the largest carrier and they have more destinations, it made getting corporate contracts significantly easier. And so if you're Delta and you're trying to peel off some of that business travel in Seattle, you need to have the destinations.
Yep. Agreed. Foz, I just have to ask in between this and the next story, are you snacking while we record this?
I was on mute.
I'm just trying to be, I'm being cute and kind of a smart ass, but
okay.
I'm just giving you a hard time because you answered the question, the, one of the other questions, and you're like, I think he's like eating an apple.
I don't know if cookies or a muffin or something like that. It's not like an apple to me.
Both of you are wrong, so there.
Okay.
Is it a fruit of some sort?
No.
Well, now you got to tell us. What is
it's
it?
It's not crunchy like chips. I mean, we're going to completely derail today's episode. Can we guess what Foz is eating?
We got to have a little fun. That's why I figured I'd ask the question. What are you eating?
A bagel.
A bagel.
Muffin to bagel's not that far off. I mean, both doughy goodness.
Is it a good bagel?
It's not bad.
Okay.
Is it the best? No. But is it better than a California bagel? Yes.
speaking of California, the next dot is LAX, and it sounds like in May, middle of May, 21 airlines are going to be moving terminals. And we've talked about this a little bit before on other shows, but it's going to happen in mid-May, and I think it's going to be a little bit of chaos there. What do you guys think?
Bringing it up now, mostly because we've got a list of all 21 airlines that are moving, including sort of who's going where. And I know, Foz, you had some interesting thoughts in our pre-planning chat about this.
I mean, looking at the list, it's like T5 is where all the kids that didn't get picked go, with the exception of JetBlue, which was surprising. Like, you look at every, we don't know where to put them. Stick them in T5.
So Frontier goes to T5. Allegiant goes to T5. Who else here? Hawaiian goes to T5. JetBlue goes to T5. Spirit goes to T5. Sun Country. Yeah, that's pretty much the land of misfit kids.
Yeah, and Volaris or one of those went to T5, or did they go to T-Bit? I can't remember.
No, Volaris is going to T-Bit. The interesting to me is I'm looking through this, both Volaris and Virgin Australia are listed as T-Bit with T2 check-in.
With a bus, with a shuttle.
You're going to check in, and it sounds like clear security at T2 and then shuttle to T-Bit. Southwest will, for international flights, will still have their check-in at T1 and then be bused to T-Bit. Now, what's interesting here to me, T3, it seems, is connected walkable to T-Bit. Is that because Copa and Interjet and Avianca are listed as T3 check-in passengers walk to T-Bit?
So that is one of the deals. I don't know if it's there yet, but that is one of the things that's happening, which is why Delta wanted to move to T2 and T3, because there's a direct connection to T-Bit.
Yeah. This seems to imply that it will be ready in May. So that's interesting.
I was in LAX not that long ago. I don't remember seeing much construction on that side of the airport. So, I mean, the thing we've talked about this a little bit in the past is there, you know, the concourses on 2 and 3 are much smaller than the T5 is. The number of gates is about the same. I think we figured this out before. Mm-hmm. So I don't understand the real benefit for Delta other than a little shorter walk to T3 or T-Bit, because they're already connected to T-Bit via the tunnel. And the only other plus would be more alleyway. So while the alleyways on the south side get congested pretty easily and hold things up, they get a little more flexibility because they have two alleyways or three alleyways to work with.
Yeah. Now, are T2 and T3 connected behind security yet?
I don't think they are, unless that's really happened.
Yeah. I'm assuming since they're saying people walk or versus bus, they're probably not. But it looks like the buildings, I mean, looking at satellite view, the buildings might be. But
how does it work? So let's say you're leaving. Is Delta or even United, do they use T-Bit as the arrival facility or like international?
Day, right? I feel like United had to for like its early morning inbound to Australia, but the later flights cleared at T7 or T6.
I have never cleared at 7. You always get bussed. I don't think the United facility is open because there just isn't enough international lift. In 6, it's supposed to be open now because that's one of the reasons why Alaska moved there. Because they didn't want to have to go to T-Bit all the time. I can't say from experience.
Yeah, with all the air, like Mexico arrivals and whatnot.
Yeah.
And see, I'm wondering how that works for Delta then. If they're moving from T5, did T5 have a facility they couldn't use and T2 does have a facility they can use?
Could that
be some motivation?
I don't know if T5 has it customs or not.
And I see a giant 747, a giant wide body parked at the end of the terminal, so definitely has international gates, but
Yeah, that's what often happens with United. You'll arrive into T7, but you walk down to the bus.
Yeah. Just trying to figure out what the motivation is here for Delta. It just seems like, really, we're creating a mess.
I think part of it's the mess, but from my understanding is they really wanted to be closer to TBIT and with the walkable connect, shorter walkable connection that allows for better connectivity to Virgin Australia and some of the other SkyTeam partners.
Mm.
So who knows if it'll work.
Makes sense. Yeah, if you're flying through LAX, be careful.
Yeah, so that's
going to be a mess for a while.
What are the dates I gave us on that? That's May, the weekend of like May 12th to 16th or something like that. Yeah, 12 to 16. It's that weekend is going to be the challenge.
As a side note, I would love to be there as they change all the signage that night and like watch all that happen.
But see, that's the thing. This is happening over multiple days, whereas when they did in Heathrow, it was all overnight.
Yeah.
So I don't even know how they're going to navigate this across multiple days because there's going to be so much confusion.
Yeah, I do wonder if a couple gates and then a couple gates or one or two people, one or two airlines others move. Like, you have all these airlines, like...
It all has to happen pretty much at the same time.
Yeah.
Right, how do you take Delta and say, well, you can move these three these three destinations, and then like how do you not you can't
yeah you couldn't do it with Delta. So it's like everybody else is small enough, you sort of could, but that Delta needs to move to T2 T3 is what kills it.
Yeah, because and you need to get everyone out of T2 and T3 to make that happen.
Well, here we go. I'm looking here. Moving out of T2 T3 is basically everybody, but moving in, Copa can move because they're moving to TBIT. They clear space in T6. That lets Allegiant or Frontier or Sun Country get a check-in desk, or maybe all three, and they can start using the gates in T5, T6.
Check-in desk at 6 for Copa is not that big.
Okay, well, it's at least one, right?
Yeah. It's I think four counters.
Okay, I'm spitballing here, man.
I'm giving you the information I have.
Yeah, I forgot you've done those flights. I never got that one. Maybe XL France moves from T2 to T6 into that space instead. I don't know. I mean, some of them also is XL France even every day?
Yeah, that's an easy one. But there's enough Allegiant flights.
Yeah, no, it's definitely going to be a challenge. Like, at some level, you have to say, it is a four-day thing, but, on Tuesday, on Sunday, it's everything, or on Saturday, it's everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's faster and more convenient connections to flights operated by Delta's joint venture and SkyTeam partners in Terminals 2, 3, and TBIT versus via an airside bus is what they're announcing in their press release right now. 23 gates, they're happy about it, yada, yada.
And the other interesting thing is, they're doing a lot of these check-in in one terminal and walk or bus to the other, which I just don't understand.
Yeah, here it is in the press release, Foss. I finally found it. The relocation will begin the night of May 12th and will continue with additional overnight moves on May 14th and May 16th, with scheduled completion on the 17th. Delta flights will operate from as many as four terminals, 2, 3, 5, and 6, on certain days of the move. So the airline will be in constant communication with customers, providing real-time information on departure and arrival terminals and gates through the Fly Delta app, text messages, emails, and additional channels. It's going to be a mess.
Man, the drop-off area at LAX is already just an absolute disaster. I don't see this making it any better. I don't know if you guys have driven the loop. I had to drop some friends off to an Ava flight there, I don't know, 6 months ago. And it was, I wanted to just park the car and leave it there. Not even deal with it.
I think I've only driven into the loop once in probably the last 2 years.
Screw plane spotting. I'm going to go watch car. I'm going to go do car spotting.
They move a lot slower.
No.
But no, so.
And LA drivers are always fun to watch because of the road rage problem.
I was like in the give up mood. I was like, you know what? This is a rental. I don't even need this thing. I'll just leave it here.
Walk away.
Avis will pick it up. It's fine.
There's a funny story there. So years ago, I used to have these colleagues, and they might be considered stoners in a previous life. And they were up in Danvers, Massachusetts, and they were going back to Logan. And the car broke down. So they pulled over to the side of the road, left the car there, took the bus somehow got to the airport, hitched a ride, whatever, walked into the rental car place, dropped the keys off, and said, where's the car? Oh, it's on the side of this road. They left it in the bad part of town.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
So by the time they got out there, the car was stripped. And so the managers at the time, they had to figure out how to do it because it was like a $30,000 charge or whatever at the end of it. So they our director at the time had four different managers put it each in against their limit so it wouldn't have to go beyond him for approval.
Wow.
So there are people who have done that. going to do that, make sure it's not a bad part of Delta.
I'm just thinking of Tommy Boy, the movie, but you know, yours is way better because it's real.
which leads me to a question. You know, we had a listener that asked kind of what we do. Maybe on a show coming up, we should talk about we can get in generalities kind of talk about our jobs. We can do that. How about that?
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
We should answer that. And he also asked about he asked some great questions. He asked about points and where to get started, and we should probably follow up on that. So we apologize.
Talk about what people actually want to hear, instead of just what we find amusing.
Yeah, pretty much. Next up, lines. LaGuardia, Raleigh-Durham, which United has been flying for, I guess, almost 2 years, right?
October.
Right.
It was October 2015.
Oh, I thought it was older than
October 2015.
I thought it was. I thought it was older than a year.
Yeah, I'll pull it up.
In any case, in June that route goes away. A little strange. It was a strange route to begin with, in my opinion.
It was a retaliatory route for Delta flying.
No, it really only started October 2016.
Oh wow. Okay. So it's only lasted 6 months.
Basically.
What were you going to say, Foz?
It was just a retaliatory route for Delta starting Newark, Raleigh.
Does that still exist too?
Yes, Delta's keeping its route.
Yeah, Delta has a mini hub in Raleigh, so it made sense. United flying LaGuardia Raleigh made no sense because they don't have any real onward connections from LaGuardia or Raleigh.
Right, and one of our listeners and friends mentioned he looked at various times to fly Cleveland LaGuardia Raleigh. Like they would sell that as a connecting routing. Yeah, because when you used to be a hub and now you're not anymore, you start jonesing for the United options, I guess. But yeah, he said it was too unreliable and flight times were bad, so he didn't do it. But
that was probably one of the most delayed flights out of LaGuardia was Cleveland. Every time I was there, that flight was delayed.
I presume this guy was saying that it was the Raleigh one that was unreliable, but you know.
I think the whole operation at LaGuardia for United is pretty crappy.
Yeah.
So anyway, if you were looking to book that one, you're going to want to do that before June. You're going to fly it, Seth, to get the line?
I think I have the line, just not on United.
Ah, gotcha. So that doesn't really matter to you.
I don't collect lines based necessarily on airlines so much as the lines, so.
Yeah. What about you, Fuzz?
I've already flown it.
Never mind. That was a dud. Kuala Lumpur, Singapore, has been announced as being the first 737 MAX route by Malindo Air, right? That's Lion Air's one of their subsidiaries.
Yeah, it's like half owned, and I do have the route on both Delta and American because I'm amazing.
It's pretty crazy when low cost carriers start have low cost carrier subsidiaries.
It's half owned by. I think that's more of a licensing and operational stuff for different countries. But yes, it's kind of strange.
Was Southwest supposed to be the delivery customer for the MAX?
Southwest is the launch customer, which doesn't necessarily mean the first delivery nor the first operator, it turns out. It just means that they were the customer that signed, you know, the big contract that convinced the OEM to make the aircraft, to start the manufacturing. As apparently
Good Lord, Franklin. That's like yeah. That's like PR speak to the nth degree.
I did it pretty well though, right?
Jeez. You did. It's annoying because I was under the impression, and maybe I should just start reading press releases more closely, that they were going to get the first one.
They never were clear on that, is my take.
And based on what we've seen on like Twitter at the Payne Field and Boeing Field, you know, Twitter account stuff, we've already seen a MAX in Southwest Airlines colors.
Isn't this the one where they had labor problems where they couldn't get to fly it, but they would have it before anyone else, but they can't actually fly it?
Part of it is, yes, there are some union issues where they didn't have the right buy-in to be able to have their pilots running it in service, so they've delayed it a little bit, it seems. So that is definitely part of it. But it's interesting. So, right, like Malindo's going to have one, and they're going to start service on the Kuala Lumpur-Singapore route, and then they'll add Bangkok and Guangzhou as they get there, you know, up to four this year. Norwegian is supposed to get four this year, and they're going to take their first ones back to Norway, do a couple proving runs, and then start flying their transatlantic routes. Southwest is going to have nine on premise when they start service. So day one, the first route is going to be, I think, Dallas, Houston, San Antonio. It's going to do the triangle to sort of, you know, honor the history of the airline. But at the same time, eight other planes are going to be flying all over the country, east to west. They're going to have one in Baltimore. They're going to have one out on the West Coast. They're everywhere. So if you look at someone I know, I have to find it. I was looking for it earlier and couldn't, but a guy I know who works there, had something on his Facebook page of sort of the Great Circle Map route drawing of all the routes that are going to be available week one. And it's far more than just one or two. It is a massive.
Wow.
So yes, they have to wait until they have the union stuff figured out. And I'm actually not sure if that is resolved yet or not. I have to look into that. But it's going to be big. It's going to be interesting.
How many more seats does the max have compared to, like, say, an 800 or 900?
8 to 8 is the same.
Okay.
The 7 is bigger. The max 7, they added 2 or 3 rows. But the big difference is new engine and some other aerodynamic improvements. Taller landing gear. They had to raise it up off the ground more because the engines are so much bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed in one of the pictures, like the front, like the nose, it doesn't go nose down towards the concrete anymore. Like the front nose gear is definitely obviously raised. Like it looks more like an Airbus, the stature.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
It actually was interesting. When I was at Lufthansa Technik last week, walking around in the 320 versus the 320neo, you can see just how big the difference is in the engine size, but it didn't look like Airbus raised it up so much. I mean, and maybe that's just because the engines were already higher off the ground or something. Like, right, the Boeings, they flattened out the bottom of the engines for clearance and whatnot. There was less space there, maybe, in the first place. But I know that the engine is definitely bigger on the 320neo as well. So it's interesting.
The reason I said something about that was I'm just thinking, I was asking about the size differences. I was thinking, you know, there's usually kinks, bugs, whatever you want to call them, with new planes running new routes. And so I wonder how Southwest is going to handle that as, you know, they have these planes spread out everywhere. I guess they can just do a one-for-one replacement with a regular 737-800.
They should be able to swap in the other aircraft without trouble, certainly from a seating perspective. Capacity and whatnot. It also means retirement of the 733s. So if you're looking for a 737-300 from an airline not based in Africa, get while the getting's good.
random discussion about Southwest. I learned last night from a friend, she's been coming to Portland from Houston back and forth. They have a nonstop. She was telling me that she had a whole row to herself, and there were other people with whole rows to herself, and she's flying on business heavy days. That's incredible to me because you fly United on any day, and there's hardly ever any empty seats. And to Houston, to Chicago, to anywhere, really. And so it makes me consider, speaking about points and stuff, flying Southwest more. Because if I get an empty row, I'm happy.
Yeah, I think betting on that is usually a losing battle.
Yeah.
I'm thinking with your luck, you would end up with, like, an oversold flight.
And everybody's a passenger size. And you're stuck.
You're going to be like PIA. You'll just have to stand the aisle.
I'm trying to find out if the union thing ever said it. All I keep seeing is that their lawsuits were filed last May, but I haven't seen anything saying it was resolved. So.
Well, let's really get your blood boiling, Seth, with the destination.
Okay.
Let's get you hyped.
I'm ready. Okay.
The electronics ban that has been announced by the United States, the UK, and Canada now.
Did Canada join?
And I thought that I had read something that Canada has said that they will be doing the same thing. I don't know if that's confirmed yet. And we're recording this on Wednesday.
Okay, I didn't.
But will they include Dubai and Abu Dhabi?
I didn't see Canada in it. The only one I think where Canada may have come into play is Montreal from Amman, Royal Jordanian.
Oh, that might be my misunderstanding. Yeah. Okay, so let's just talk about this. They're saying no electronics, large electronics, so anything bigger than a cell phone in the cabin for flights from specific countries or airports, including Istanbul, Dubai, Doha,
Abu Dhabi.
That's
the most bizarre one to me. Like, say you've got these rules, whatever, and, like, you know, you've got intelligence that people aren't, you know, assuming even that's true, which we all have a mutual friend who has suggested to me that's not really the case, that there's no new actionable intelligence, just people on hunches, but who has seen the, you know, diplomatic cables. So, yay. But even if you assume all that's true, the security operation for flights that have pre-clearance is supposed to meet TSA rules, and Abu Dhabi is a pre-clearance station. So you can't say that an inbound aircraft from a facility where security checks and passenger checks and everything else meets U.S. you know, TSA standards somehow doesn't meet our security requirements. Like, that's just terribly inconsistent, baffling, and bizarre.
And to be clear, these rules don't apply to domestic U.S. flights. So the idea, right. like, you know, a pre-cleared flight, it is operating kind of as like a domestic flight, yes. right? So it's kind of asinine and backwards.
Well, that's just one of the many asinine and backwards components of this new policy. Adding to the list, you know, there's been a bunch of people have been like, but you can't bring lithium ion batteries in cargo. That's true. There are strict limits on batteries as cargo on commercial aircraft. Cargo means something different than checked baggage. So the FAA and ICAO do both allow for batteries up to a certain size, all of which are generally reasonable for a laptop or whatever, in checked bags. That's not a problem. But you've got now all of these batteries in the cargo hold, and who the hell knows? Like, we've seen enough situations where there have been fires with these batteries, far more than we've seen terrorist incidents, for example, that's a far greater risk. And you're now putting them in the hold where you can't address the fire nearly as easily.
And with other items that could have thermal runaways.
Well, and like Emirates, on Wednesday morning, there was an interview published by the AP with Sir Tim Clark, CEO of Emirates. And he's talking about what the airline is doing, you know, how surprised he is that Dubai is included and all these other things. You know, it's his very politic way of saying, are you effing kidding me? And implying that there's more to it than just the security bits. But the other thing he says is, you know, what we're going to be as good to our customers as we possibly can. We're going to allow them to use their laptops, use their devices until the very last minute, and then we'll collect them, put them in the cargo hold, and deliver it to them when they arrive, which to me sounds a whole lot, you know, putting aside the logistics and liability challenges of it, it sounds a whole lot like there's going to be like an Emirates-provided suitcase, essentially, or bin with a stack of 100 laptops or 200 laptops in it, right? I mean, you're talking, an A380 with 450 seats? So how many iPads and laptops are going to all be sort of sitting in a box next to each other? It only takes one to go bad for that whole thing to become a ginormous risk, just terrible, terrible challenge there. And one of the interesting things about a lithium ion battery fire as opposed to, you know, typical fire, there's necessarily typical, but like, you know, a lighter or something like that, lighting, you know, a magazine on fire or your clothes on fire, a Halon fire suppressant system doesn't necessarily put out a lithium ion fire. For a typical fire, it can put it out because it, you know, evacuates the oxygen from the compartment, the cargo bin. And with no oxygen, nothing burns. The lithium ion is so hot that even without oxygen, there's risk of the chemical reaction, or not no oxygen, but with the limited oxygen, it gets hot enough that the you can still have the runaway challenges where it continues to burn and melt itself. So they actually say you're supposed to dunk it in water to diffuse the heat and isolate it from oxygen, which is, you know, again, like what you don't do that with a grease fire, but you do it here because it starves the oxygen and helps cool much faster. And that is generally the recommended way to deal with such fire. So when it happens in the cabin, that's, you know, generally the flight attendants either have a containment bag, and a lot of airlines actually have these containment bags now that deal with it. Or I think if you don't have that, you throw it in the trash bin in a cart and then like pour as much water and sodas on it as you can to try to douse it. And fire extinguishers and other things. Yeah. So it's this interesting mix, but what you end up with is potentially taking what is, you know, let's assume at the very, very remote chance that one of these dangerous things gets on board that's, you know, is a battery or is not a battery, but, you know, a fake battery that's actually a bomb. What you now have is that thing next to all of these other lithium ion batteries ready to go. And to me, that seems like a bad idea.
So one comment. I know at Cathay, at least, doesn't want any lithium-ion batteries in your check bags.
So the rule is no spare lithium-ion batteries in your check bags. And they all say, okay, you know, none, but you know, no batteries. But it's that's an interesting one. I honestly don't know is the short answer there. But it's I don't know if Cathay has a stricter rule, but I had this conversation actually with a flight attendant on Facebook the other day when this all happened. And it was, yes, when you're checking, you know, when you gate check a bag, they say take anything with a lithium battery out. Part of that is because it's easier to, you know, in the 30 seconds you have to explain this to a passenger, it's far easier to say that than say, well, if it's installed in a laptop, it's okay. And if it's installed in an e-reader, it's okay. But it can't be in a this and da-da-da-da-da. And it can't be an e-cigarette and this and that. So That's actually the other rules. No e-cigarettes in checked bags. That's very strictly enforced in theory. So, but you are allowed to have some types of lithium ion batteries in checked bags per the FAA and ICAO rules. It's ICAO. It's the International Civil Aviation Organization.
Aviation,
it's
yeah.
It's a UN mm-hmm. thing. It's for those who... I've been chided in the past for not talking about through my acronyms. Sorry. that sort of... Those rules do allow for this to happen, but... Doesn't necessarily mean it's a good idea. Doesn't necessarily mean that every airline will permit it. Some can be more strict. It is interesting to me. I've had two reports. You know, we talked just now about the Emirates and how they're dealing with it. I've had two reports from travelers on Qatar Airways in the last 12 hours or so. One leaving Doha who said extra security screening was in force, strongly enforced, and they were absolutely taking laptops away from people at the gate. Another passenger who was connecting through Doha and was en route and told that they could take their bag and laptop with them for the first segment, but that at Doha they'd be forced to check it at transit security. So
wow. So one of the things I had a question about was the country list is different between
yes.
the UK yes, and the United is. States. The UK includes Tunisia, and the United States does not. Does the UK
country.
Include Dubai?
No. There's a second country also included. I forget who. I'm forgetting who it is now, but both of those don't have flights to the United States. So that's gotcha. A reasonable... That's a justifiable explanation for why they're excluded or not included on the U.S. view. But the United Arab Emirates and Qatar are not included on the UK list, and they are included on the U.S. list.
So could this be one way to get back at the ME3 carriers and make try to steer some of the business travel away
ding,
from
ding,
them?
Ding, 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 ding. Give that man a bagel. He's a winner. if one is inclined to believe in unfortunate coincidences, yes.
I think the lack of Dubai on the UK list is a saving grace for people like Qantas, right? Because Qantas connects so many flights through Dubai now as their connecting hub. That if this had been enforced in Dubai, the Qantas, they have what, 12 A380 flights through there a day or something ridiculous? So that would have just been a mess, an absolute mess.
Yeah, it's...
And it's already a mess.
This is a small silver lining on a... massive mess, massive black cloud, as it were. It is good that there's a tiny bit of reasonable behavior here, but it's hard for me to see those three airports' inclusion, especially Abu Dhabi with preclearance, but all three of them,
yep.
as anything other than economic warfare and political motivation.
Yeah. Agreed. So what is our recommendation for listeners to connect via Europe to the United States, possibly, to avoid this?
Do the Emirates flights from Athens and Milan get impacted by this?
Yes. Yes, they do. If you are originating in Dubai for either of those flights, you cannot bring your electronics on board. I have not heard an update about passengers originating in Milan or Athens, but I would have, based on the way it's written and what the theoretical risk profile was, I'd assume that those passengers would be okay because they're being scanned in at a better country, so to speak, and not what I actually believe, but how it's being interpreted.
Yes, those Italians.
Yeah, super, super focused on security and filing procedures, let me tell you. Maybe a different
day. And the Greeks.
Maybe a different day, those stories from my passport experiences. It's hard to know. To see if they've updated that policy yet. But as of yesterday, I hadn't seen an official statement on it.
So I've never done either of those two flights. So based on that, I'm assuming that when you come in from Dubai on one of those flights, you actually don't have to deboard. You can stay on the board then, right? Is that the expectation?
I haven't done them either, but it seems that way if they're not letting you carry your laptop through. Otherwise, or maybe you deplane, but you're not rescreened, so you're still considered in transit, so you still originated there.
Okay.
You're just like in a holding pen.
I don't know. I've not done them either.
But I mean, is our recommendation that people fly via Europe for?
My recommendation is don't put electronics in check bags. Period.
Yeah.
That is my recommendation. I think that is a terrible thing to do, fraught with risk and uncertainty and challenges that if it's at all possible to avoid, you should. If you're a United States government employee and are forced to fly on the published city pairs, you might not have that choice. Dulles to Dubai is an Emirates route.
Well, what they don't tell you is when you upon arrival in the U.S., they're just going to hand the laptops all to the customs and border people to image first.
Yes. We'll give them to you right outside here. It's just going to take a half hour or so to get them out. Really sorry for the delay.
No. They'll keep you on the plane. They just won't be able to get the jet bridge to work while imaging them.
It's what was the movie where they the guy had to like board the plane that had the bomb on it somewhere over the Atlantic? Do you remember this? He like moved between the two planes.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, you're talking about yeah, I remember it. It's crap. What is
executive
that?
Decision?
It might be. Yeah, I remember it. Like he climbed like up a staircase that like the plane like sucked onto the bottom.
Anyway, but yeah, Executive Decision with Kurt Russell and Steven Seagal. This is absolutely the movie. They took like a stealth fighter and like come up underneath the plane and have a docking collar that he comes in through a cargo door. The whole thing is completely ridiculous. But I don't even remember why this. Oh, because I was saying they could do that and have that guy sitting in the cargo bin doing all the imaging during the flight.
Nice. Actually, maybe that's what's going on. Maybe there's they're just grabbing the laptops and imaging them on the flight over.
There's a guy down below.
Like a cargo bin. He's got a porta potty, a couple beef jerky, and packs of crackers, and he's sitting there imaging laptops the whole flight.
Exactly.
Let's just go ahead and assume he's using a diesel generator to have enough power to be able to do that, because that makes me think the whole thing is completely ridiculous.
Well,
we've gone really off track.
Well.
One thing I'm wondering is, like, so I have a friend that's going to be transiting Istanbul in, I don't know, a month, maybe 2 months, and they're worried, they're very worried about taking their laptop, and they need it because they're going to work in India, but they're transiting Istanbul, and her plan right now is to just ship the thing, which works for some people, depending on the size of the battery and stuff. But there's things you can't ship.
Well, see, here's the thing. Either. Shipping like you can't put it in cargo. That actually may be a much more significant problem than carrying it as checked baggage.
And I only know this because I just recently had to deal with this, because for my company, we ship lithium-ion batteries. On the battery packs, we're actually putting stickers that say not allowed on passenger aircraft because
freighter carriers have a higher allowance. Obviously, you buy a laptop that's made in China, it has to get here somehow. So there's higher allowances, but it's challenging still. It's not like unlimited. There still are rules.
And so that's where, you know, I'm getting at is like, okay, so do people feel comfortable shipping it? I mean, it's better than putting in the cargo hold, right, of your passenger plane. Because the theft, I'm worried about like theft and things, transiting foreign airports.
Not even foreign airports, but yes, from a theft perspective.
Transiting JFK.
I think that from a theft perspective, you are better off shipping it. Also, you can insure it properly, right? And I've said this a few times this week as well. The dollar amount is much less of an issue than the rebuilding my life on a laptop, right? I mean, money is money and insurance either covers it or doesn't. But to rebuild my laptop to have everything the way I use it is not a 20-minute job. It's probably not even a 20-hour job because I'm ridiculous. But it's a process.
Completely agree.
I forgot how he was a flight attendant in that movie. Anyways, I think we should stop the show now before I talk about any more horrible aviation movies.
B-roll movies.
if you start talking about snakes on a plane,
but you saw that happen, right? Last week? This week? In Alaska?
Yes. So I saw the heading. I didn't dig into the article, but I saw there you made a movie about
Raven Airlines, RAVN, is one of Alaska's like regional prop partners up there, independent, but flies a lot of connecting traffic for Alaska Airlines, had a snake crawl out of a bag, and like there's a photo circulating now of a flight attendant basically wrangling the snake. And it's like a 5-foot long snake. This is not a little garter snake. This is a real deal.
Oh, man. And they fly like Cessna 208.
Yeah. Well, this had to be, it was big enough. Maybe it was big enough that there's a flight attendant on board.
Oh.
Picture of like a woman standing there wearing a uniform, but I don't know what it is. I feel like, I forget what the rule is. I was trying to explain to someone on the TSA, like there's no TSA because the flights are on small enough planes and are remote enough. But I forget what the cutoff is. It's like 20 or 30 passengers on a plane. You don't necessarily need TSA screening.
Had no idea.
It's like Seaport Airlines used to do that on its flights between Seattle and Portland.
As long as you're not going into an airport for a connection.
Well, the passengers are outside security the whole time.
Yeah, because I've done the Cape, blank out the name, Cape Air. And I've always had to go through security, but that's because we're going to another big airport.
Right, that's because they interline with JetBlue and whoever else, United, depending on which side of the world you're on.
Well, Foz and I will be experiencing Raven in August, hopefully.
So nice.
We'll let you know how it goes.
They have a ridiculous route map.
Yes, they do.
They do. They really do. Oh, man. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap up the show, guys. Everyone can find us. Our listeners can find us on Twitter at DotsLines, moredotsmorelines.com. Leave us a comment. Send us a tweet. We do enjoy hearing from you, and hopefully we'll get to your questions on the next show. Bye-bye for now.
Take care.
Sweet.